Drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Welcome on in. This is the CDGA Golf Show presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, we talk golf with you every single Saturday throughout the golf season. And Mike, it may not feel like the golf season after the snow flurries we got yesterday. I don't know how much you guys got out at the CDGA Golf House in Lamont, but it kind of like dampened a little golf mood yesterday, but you know what? I think that's good for some of the simulators out there. I think that's good for places like Golf Tech, and we are going to talk a little bit about getting ready for the season a little bit later on with James Stanhart over at Golf Tech as well. That's coming up at 10 o'clock a little bit later on, but it feels like we're right around the corner, but then you get that little snow flurry, and it's like, oh, what the hell is this?
Exactly, and good morning. You know, driving down here, it was amazing when, you know, out in the suburbs right now, it's so sunny. I mean, it's...
Is it really?
Oh, it is. It wasn't until I got to Devon that all of a sudden things got dark and cloudy down here, and it's cold and damp. But out in the suburbs, everybody's definitely going to be out hitting, at least in the heated bays. But to your point, I went to a function out at X Golf on Thursday, and it was really for the NCAA party. But used their simulators as a great way to entertain.
Perfect,
and let me tell you, those things were absolutely packed, and it was a lot of fun. They had the par three at Pebble Beach, the iconic one for closest to the hole. But to your point, yeah, the indoor places are flourishing right now, and that's the, you know, that's part of the issue of living north of the Mason-Dixon line. Is that we're going to have days and periods of this in March. And really the consistent weather is still a good 4 to 6 weeks away in terms of good, consistent golfing weather. But in the interim, we still have time to get ready for the season. And I'm excited to talk to James later.
Yeah, I think that the rise of some of these indoor facilities and the simulators and all that stuff, it feels like a lot of clubs have them now. It feels like a lot of practice areas have them now. Even like some courses around the area too, they all have these simulators now. And I think it's great for the northern golfers like us, because you still can get that sort of feel of I'm getting out there, I'm getting ready for the season, I'm hitting balls, and I can either mimic a full round, I can just go to the quote unquote range that they've got there and get all my specs and numbers on like your ball speeds and all that stuff too. It's amazing how it really has transformed the golfing culture in the northern areas of the entire country.
There's no doubt. And for somebody like myself that grew up without, we didn't even have videotape yet.
Right.
So how you learned the game was you'd go hit balls and then you'd turn to somebody and ask them, well, how did that look? Like, how did my swing look? Because the result was good. I want to try to remember what I did, but there was no instantaneous kind of feedback. And what you also found was you'd start asking people what they thought, and now you're getting three or four different opinions that, you know, everyone has their own thoughts, but you get kind of more messed up than you would corrected. So in today's age and technology, it's amazing the learning curve can be so accelerated for anyone who wants to play the game and is new to the game or has an interest in playing the game, especially for those that come from any form of athleticism in their past, whether it's basketball, volleyball, because you can almost equate any sport into golf because of simply balance. And balance, I'm sure James will talk about that, and tempo and a lot of different things, and how to start getting ready for the season, because it really is just around the corner. But, you know, we'll have days where, you know, we'll see that 75, but I wouldn't be surprised if we still get a few more inches of snow between now and the Masters.
By the way, this segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our four Chicagoland locations today. They've got some indoor hitting facilities as well at a number of those PGA Tour Superstores, including the one in Lincoln Park. I've been to that one, and you just see it is a absolute candy store for any golfer. Like,
absolutely.
That's what that place is. But yeah, no, I think this is where I kind of want to start today in talking about the in talking about getting ready for the season is like when you're at the early portions of the season, you start to kind of get together a little game plan of how you want to get better for the year. And what is the one thing that you want to really improve on for the year? So I'll start with you. What's the one thing you're looking at really improving on for this upcoming golf season?
Honestly, it's the area I really hate the most to practice, and that's chipping.
Mm.
The ability to escape, because I've now become pretty accomplished tee to green, but if I really want to get my game to that next level, I need to be able to get it up and down more often than I can right now. And currently the wedge or whatnot feels a little bit like a sledgehammer because I haven't been practicing it. And this is a game, and it's a finesse piece of the game,
right?
And it's one that you have to stay up on top of if you're going to play at a high amateur tournament competition level, or even at the, obviously the PGA Tour level. But if you watch how these guys practice on tour, the professionals, and how much time they dedicate to this aspect of the game, I would like to become much more accomplished, not only with the new putter I got, but really being able to get the ball up and down this year more often than I've ever been before. So that's really my goal, is to improve in the short game area.
And I think, too, early in the season, the wedges are what takes the longest amount of time to get into the shape that you want it to. I don't know why, but for some reason, for me, I feel like early in the season, my putting's there. And then by the time we get to June, it feels like it flips, and my wedges and short game are there, but the putting's not there. I don't know why. It just happens to me. But it does feel like the wedges are sometimes what takes the longest to really get into the form you want it to be in. Have you noticed that too, or would you say it's another facet of your game?
No, that's not uncommon for people because, you know, again, they get so confident in the putting that they dedicate and become much better and proficient in the other areas. Then they kind of, you know, it's kind of like plate spinning. You know, you got your short mm-hmm. game, you got your putting, you got yeah. your driving. So you can't really let it go even in the middle of the season. You've got to stay on top of that, the putting aspect. And really where I find it difficult towards the end of the year is because now you're starting to play greens that are very crusty, some that are amazingly fast. Your variations of speed at that time of year can be, you know, something of a challenge in all in itself. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you never really own any aspect of your game. I think you just kind of rent it for a while, and it kind of comes and goes. But the ability to create, and I think James is going to get into this, a process as to how you go about your goals this year, a process as to how you go about practicing. And I would challenge everybody this year, and it's going to be, again, one of my goals this year, is to every time I go practice, it's with a purpose. It's not just to go out there because I have a half an hour and I'm just going to, you know, fire a bucket of balls out there and not really aim them and not really pay much attention to them, because really that's just a waste of my time. And in fact, I might be practicing bad habits. Mm-hmm. So I really want to practice with more quality in mind, you know, a really strong 20, 25 minutes versus an hour of beating balls. And I think everyone would be better off for it. It's not, you know, how long you do it. It's the quality and the fashion that you do it.
Yeah, totally agree with you on that there. I think, too, getting back to the chipping as well, I've noticed this at a number of courses, and I don't blame them for doing this, but a lot of courses I feel like have ditched their chipping areas, too. So a lot of them used to let you chip onto the putting greens. A lot of those courses now, I feel like, have put up no chipping signs. And on top of that, if you are going to have a chipping area, you would need space for another practice green. And mm-hmm. some of these courses, they don't have the space for the practice green. They oftentimes would rather have more space to kind of lengthen the course, especially with the way that people are hitting some balls these days. Some of them want to use that space to lengthen the first tee, to lengthen different areas of the course that may run along where the putting greens areas are.
No, and there have been golf courses in our district that have lost their short game areas because after evaluation, a lot of our operators will tell you that the short game area, believe it or not, is one of the most underutilized facilities that they offer.
Even though it shouldn't be.
And it's free, mm-hmm. okay? But the other part of it is it does take work. It does take effort. You do have to bring your own golf balls, and after you chip them, you have to go pick them up. Well, that's, I mean, back in the day, that's how you would practice your range. You would just go out to an open field, hit them, and then you'd have to walk down and hopefully put them in an area close enough that it was easy to pick up and not lose any. But that's how you used to practice. And so I think because there isn't an automatic, you know, ball getting teed up for you, i.e., you know, Top Golf.
Right.
And honestly, you know, chipping is not exciting because you're not smashing the ball. It's all about, to your point, the finesse and the touch. But it also can be fun because you can have games and challenges. Because when we hit balls off of grass, we often give ourselves the best lie we possibly can. Mm-hmm. But in reality, when you're faced with a chip shot, you have to play it as it lies. So that's where then the challenge can be with others, is to give one another lies that you wouldn't normally give yourself. And now you got to figure out, how do I get myself out of that? So that when you're in a competition or, you know, friendly wager, and you do come across that shot, you're like, I've had this before.
Right.
Now I know how I, you know, bladed it before. So now this time I'm going to do this. And that's how you learn and improve.
And I think that's another part of why I feel like a lot of these courses have gotten rid of the chipping on the true putting greens that people usually use to putt on. People do blade them. And you'll get some screamers across the putting green, and it can be dangerous at times. I've seen it before. I've seen someone take one in the calf before on a little chipping practice. Like, that's what it just kind of happens, and you just have to be careful with that. And as a golf, if you're a golf course operator, I'm sure you don't want to deal with that headache.
No, you don't, and it's a liability issue in that regard. But generally speaking, too, to have the space for a practice area and how they locate it, it's generally not in the most convenient location at many facilities.
Right.
But when you go out to like a place like Fox Bend, it's ideal because it's all a part of their whole practice range complex. Mm-hmm. So for those out in Oswego, you have no excuse to not be a good short game player out at Fox Bend, because you have one of the best facilities. But in other places, you have to walk. It might be in the back part of the range, or, you know, and that takes even more effort, more time. And unfortunately, when we decide, do I want to hit a small bucket of balls or work on my chipping, everybody goes to hit the balls.
Right. Yep. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us here and let us know, what are you looking at most trying to improve in your game this upcoming golf season? I'll share mine with you when we come back. This is the CDGA Golf Show, and this segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our four Chicagoland locations today.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
It's the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Speaking of Glenview Park Golf Club, they will be officially opening up for business on Monday.
Yeah.
Monday. We got the text from Ron Cassidy, director of golf over at Glenview Park Golf Club, that they are going to go no matter what on Monday the 25th. So that is 2 days from now. So
yeah,
if the weather starts turning, get on out to Glenview Park Golf Club. And hopefully the weather starts to cooperate a little bit.
Oh,
you said it's a little sunnier in the suburbs than it is in the city, though.
It's way sunnier right now. It's unbelievable. In fact, there's going to be a lot of people playing today, even though...
You think so? Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, out in the suburbs, they sure will. But, yeah, the folks in Glenview, I can almost feel them cheering right now that finally Ron is open for business on Monday. Because if you haven't played up there, do yourself a favor and go, because one of the finest conditioned public courses in our district, period. Yep. End of story.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite courses in the entire area. The course I grew up on. It is what I consider to be my home course, if you will. By the way, this segment brought to you by Tour Edge. So I was telling you a little bit before about, and we want to hear from you as well, what's the one thing you're looking at really improving on? And maybe if you're looking for any sort of tips or drills or something to work on it, Mike is a beacon of knowledge. So call us up, 312-332-3776. But for me, the one thing I'm really looking for is, I've had this nasty slice off the tee, and I've been trying to find consistency with it, because I feel like some rounds I'm out there and I'm really locked in, and I can, and it's never an issue that even crosses my mind over the course of the 18 holes. And then sometimes I'm out there and I won't pull the driver out of the bag after the fifth hole because it's just, it's too far in my head and I cannot figure out the way to control the slice. And I feel like a lot of that comes into how much have I warmed up beforehand as well. If I'm not getting like a good, maybe like 30 to 40 balls at the range beforehand, sometimes I feel like that plays a factor in it. And other times it's just like, it's just not my day. It's not my day off the tee, and I resort to trying to find other clubs to use off of that tee box.
Well, that's why I think having James on is really going to help you specifically, because part of the philosophy when you're being taught, especially by James and his crew, and I take lessons out at his laboratory, if you will, out in Naperville.
Those are laboratories,
and they really
too.
Are. Yeah. It's so cool. But one of the things they help you with is when things are not in check, how to find it. So it's like you have this little toolbox with you that you now have newfound knowledge of your own swing so that you can, based on some early results, you know, tweak what you're doing to save the round versus going through it in an abyss, blind, frustrated. That's one of the benefits of, you know, getting prepared early with a credible, you know, Illinois PGA professional and having a game plan so that when things aren't there, you can discover it or rediscover it. But it's natural for all of us to start out with that nasty slice, the banana ball, however some people like to call it affectionately a power fade.
Yeah.
That's not a power fade. That went out and put its right turn signal on and went. So basically, you know, as humans, we're all wired to think that we're strongest from our chest up. And we want to start everything down to the golf ball. Human nature tells us to start it with our hands, but the reality of it, the hands go last, and it starts from the ground and works up when we come to that discernible pause. No different than if you were hitting a baseball. The first thing you would do is toe tap, stride, and then you would drive your hips, and the bat's staying back. The golf swing's exactly the same way, except the plane is different. It's just the ball is now down towards the ground where you're hunting for a ball or a strike when you're trying to, you know, hit a fastball or a curveball. So those actions are different, but as humans, we're not wired to think that way. So the first thing you do is you throw it from the top or you cast it, and your right elbow is now running away from your rib cage, and now you're creating an outside to in swing path. And if you have a closed club head, you'll square it back up. But if you're square, well, now you're basically wiping the golf ball instead of striking the golf ball. So I simulate this, you know, the field goal kicker, his leg. When you watch a sidewinder kick, if you notice, the good football that they kick has just a little pretty little draw to it.
Yeah.
And you're trying to simulate their right leg on the downstroke of your swing path with your club to go from the inside to the out. But that is the puzzle without an answer in terms of how do you best feel that versus how I best feel that versus, you know, how Charlie might feel that. And James will get into that a little bit more. But I think one of the exciting things for you is, and I would ask anybody out there, if you've never had your golf swing really videotaped before, I would encourage you to do that first and foremost, because I think we all have a certain image of what our swing looks like. And then when you actually see it, in some cases, you might be horrified. I mean, you're like, that can't possibly be me, but it is. But that's where you start the rebuilding process. And I think just getting the setup right is 80% of the swing. And I'd love to hear what James thinks about that. But getting yourself set up for success is so important to, you know, and then all you have to do is execute pulling it back and firing it. But having good posture and allowing yourself good athleticism into your swing will naturally improve your ball dispersion, meaning you won't be going so far right or so far left. You'll narrow this up just by getting your setup correct.
Yeah. I think another thing too is that I have sort of an information overload on it. Anytime I see an article, anytime I see a TikTok or something about a slice, I'm taking a mental note and I'm trying it. And maybe I'm trying too many different things at once to try to fix this thing. And that's part of the problem, too.
that is your problem. Mm-hmm. Because what you're doing is basically...
I'm just too desperate to fix it.
Well, it is. Part of the and you're searching for the quick pick mm-hmm. fix or the quick pill I can take.
Yeah.
But... You know, over-analysis can lead to what I call total paralysis.
Right.
And you've got so many thoughts running around in your brain that you almost can't even pull the club back. And that's actually happened to some of the best golf professionals out there in trying to search for, you know, their game or that magic again. And, you know, it takes time. It takes that kind of patience and... You know, it's not an easy process, but I think keeping things simple is the best way to go. And I think getting a golf professional involved in your game early on will get all the confusion out, and it will leave you with a clearer mind and leave you with a thought or two and no more. And that's where and when I notice I play my best is when I'm really only thinking about one thing and the rest just happens. Yeah. And it's... Now is the time to find that one swing key.
Right. Yeah. It's basically like once you get to that point where you're right, the only thing you're really thinking about is your feet positioning, and then you grip it and rip it.
Yeah.
Then you find yourself in a good spot.
A little visual imagery before mm-hmm. the shot, get behind the ball, paint the picture, and then at that point, play.
Right.
Free up your mind. And release. Play. Because how many times do you then walk away after you hit the bad shot going, you know, I was hesitant. You know, I really didn't give it 100%.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're kicking yourself, especially when you decide, ooh, I'm going to hit 5-iron off this tee. I'm going to be strategic. But then you really don't fire it and you baby it. And the next thing you know, you left it in the rough and you're like, shoot, I could have hit a driver in this rough. Well, then why didn't you? You know, right. Just get up, relax, hit it and go. So, yeah, it's overcoming those mental barriers as well in that regard. But if you have a sound foundation, both mentally and physically, to start from, and it's a simple one at that, that's how you're going to start seeing success very quickly.
312-332-3776. What are you trying to improve upon for this upcoming golf season? Bear fan Bob is on the road on 294. What's up, Bob?
Hey, Bob.
Okay, good morning. So my problem is putting. And I got to tell you, I've only golfed probably 60 rounds in my whole life. I'm a reasonably new golfer. It's a new hobby since I've gotten older. And my club is Strawberry Creek, and I can't get the touch right to save my life. It's either too hard, too soft, goes to the right, goes to the left. It's horrible. And I know I even practice before I golf at the little putting things they have there, and it don't matter. I still can't get it right. Do you have any tips to help me?
Well, let me ask you this question. Is the result of your three putts the first putt or the second putt? Meaning, are you leaving yourself, are you having a tough time lagging and getting the ball close? Or, hey, I'm getting it reasonably close. I just can't make anything from 6 feet and in.
Well, sometimes it's almost like I'm afraid of it to hit it. And when I finally do hit it, it might be too hard. You know, maybe I don't understand the, sometimes the greens, they're fast and sometimes they're slow. And I just haven't learned touch yet. Maybe that's what it is.
Okay.
I don't know.
So, and to develop touch, the best thing we can do is look at the putting stroke that we're using and understand whether it's a 12-inch putt, a 12-foot putt, or a 100-foot putt. Every shot in this game has a slight acceleration to it. So if you are ever decelerating, like you're afraid of hitting it too far past the hole, and you find yourself decelerating the putter through impact, that is going to allow for a lot of misses and a lot of pulls. We basically want to have a short, you know, backswing back and go one-third back, two-thirds forward. Try that out. Always one-third back, two-thirds forward to make sure that putter stays online, but that every putt is a bit of an acceleration so that you can keep it and put it online early and it will stay online that way. But it's also, for long putts, a better way to feel instead of a big, long arcing stroke with a deceleration. Take it back, but have an acceleration to it. And as you walk and approach greens, I would suggest always, and I love Strawberry Creek, by the way. It's one of my favorite clubs in our district, even though it's over the border there in Wisconsin. And they have green speeds that are unbelievable up there. And what I found is when you walk on them, you have to pay attention which way the grain is going. So what I do is I look to see where the color is dark green versus light green. And if it's dark green, I'm putting into the grain, and that's going to be slower. If it's light green, that means the sun is, if it's like shiny and you can, that means the grass is running away from you. And that's when it's going to be really, really, really quick. And then obviously you got to pay attention to, you know, the contours of the green and the whatnot. But I would suggest, you know, a shorter backstroke and a more committed one at that.
Okay, I got it. You know, I'll try that. That makes a whole lot of sense. Third back and two-thirds forward. That's wonderful. Thank you ever so much.
There you go.
I appreciate it.
Go
hey,
Bears.
You guys have a good day. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. That's Bear Fan Bob. You want to join us, 312-332-3776. We'll take a few more of your calls when we come back. And also, we've got a couple of Masters journals I want to give away as well. And we can kind of segue that in with a little bit of Countdown to Augusta that I want to start featuring here, because we are getting closer and closer. We are now less than a month until the Masters. So we'll do all that when we come back. This segment brought to you by Tour Edge.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Tyler Aki and Mike Gilligan with you here on the CDGA Golf Show. Believe it or not, Mike, we are 19 days away from the opening Thursday round at Augusta, and why don't we do a little bit of a countdown to Augusta? Every week, we'll feature a few different golfers that we want to talk about in our countdown to Augusta.
The birds are chirping. The azaleas are in full bloom. And the green jacket is perfectly tailored.
We look forward to you wearing the green jacket at Augusta National for many years to come.
It's the Countdown to Augusta on the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000.
That's right, our Countdown to Augusta. And in the spirit of March Madness, I figured we would go through some of the Cinderella-type stories that we could see emerge at the Masters this year. I think there was a great one last year with Sam Bennett, the amateur, who was fantastic. You saw him on that leaderboard graphic for the majority of the time that he was out there in the event. And it was one of my favorite stories, and he became one of the golfers now that I consistently track at a lot of these different events that he's playing in.
Yeah, no question. And that's what makes the Masters special. There's always a story within the story. And I don't know why it happens, but this golf course brings out the best in those kinds of things and stories. And, you know, the golf course is special, the event is special, and everything that goes along with it. The Masters committee and the group down there, they do an exceptional job of putting on, I just think, the greatest event in golf.
Yes, no doubt about that. So here are some of the long shots that have won the whole thing since 1990. You've got Trevor Immelman, 150-1. Zach Johnson, another one, 125-1. Charles Schwartzel, 100-1. So those are some of your really long shot winners that have gone out and won the event. And as you look at some of the odds for this year, guys who are sort of in that longer shot to win the Masters right now. It's funny because it's a lot of live guys sort of in this little area here. You got Phil finished, was he tied for second or tied for third last year? He finished in third last year. He's at 130-1.
I know.
So if you think Phil can channel a little bit of magic a la what he did last year, that may be a name to keep an eye out for. Adam Scott is also here. Abraham Anser is back here as well. Little bit shorter odds, but you get into your Justin Roses, your Corey Connors, Brian Harman, who's been playing some good golf as of late as well. He's at 75-1.
I was going to say 75-1. That is the one
for a guy who won a major last year.
Won a major and
with part of the Ryder Cup
and almost won the Players Championship last week.
Mm-hmm. He was in the thick of things.
And really, if you give him that putt over again, you know, he may.
Yeah.
It's just it's amazing how good that guy is playing and how far he's hitting it for as small a guy in stature as he is. It's incredible. So he's a guy that I immediately marked down. And, you know, you mentioned live guys. One that I think could surprise a few people is Tyrell Hatton.
Yes.
At 50-1. I mean, he's just sort of lurking in the distance back there, and he is so accomplished. And also at 50-1, I like Shane Lowry. I mean,
I've always been a big Shane Lowry fan because I think you always get the one day, it's either Thursday or Friday, where the weather sucks. And he's one of those guys who's just built to play in different conditions because of where he's from. And it's part of why he's been so good at the British Open for so many years is because he's built for that bad weather golf. And he's one of those guys, it feels like he kind of lingers in the top 10 and plays some of his best golf when maybe some other people are playing some of their worst golf.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. And, I mean, if you really want it for me, if I really look at a long shot, that first off human interest story and one that I would just love to see happen is Chris Kirk at 150-1.
That's a good one, yeah.
I mean, this kid is on a comeback story of his life and now living his best life as he goes about his business on the PGA Tour, reestablishing himself as a formidable player as he was in college. And it would be just an amazing story if he were to be able to break through and get his first major next month. And then another guy I look at, and I'm shocked that he's only at 46-1, is Matsuyama.
I was going to bring his name up. He was one that I kind of was like, that's interesting for a guy who's not too far removed from winning the event. Matsuyama at 46-1 is certainly intriguing to me. Here's another one, and this guy kind of needs everything locked in on those days when he does play really well, but we've seen him put together four straight days of really good golf. How about Gary Woodland at 130-1?
Yeah, I mean, and that's another human interest story. And I mean, a former major winner.
Yeah.
Although, unfortunately, this
how
past
far removed
week,
are we now?
A couple of years, three years now. I think it is because it was, I think, pretty much during that COVID time.
Believe you're right. Yeah.
So, but you know, we wish the best all for Gary's coming off that surgery that almost literally took his life. Let alone
that's right.
Was he gonna ever be able to play the game of golf again? And he's been able to make some cuts. He's out there. It's great to see him out there. He's a loved guy amongst his peers. But unfortunately, this past week he did miss the cut down at Copperhead, so at the Valspar. So hopefully he can get himself up and going by early April. And again, another great story to follow.
Yeah. So, yeah, these are some of the long shots we're kind of taking a look at. A couple other groupings that I think we'll take a look at as well. We'll look at some defending champions. We will look at some of the young up-and-comers. And we'll look at some of just the biggest names as well. So we'll cover that in our countdown to Augusta as we inch closer and closer to the beginning of the Masters taking place starting. And it's right around the corner right now. It all gets going on April 11th down in Augusta. 312-332-3776 if you want to join us as well. I do want to give away a couple of these Masters journals right now as well. We've got a trio of them here. We're also going to do some Masters trivia a little bit later on as well and give away a taste of the Masters. But how about callers 5 and 10 right now? You will get one of these Masters journals. If you're watching us on YouTube or Twitch right now, you can see I'm holding it up right here. It's a beautiful cover. But the callers 5 and 10 right now, you will win a Masters journal. 312-332-3776. Sam is in the Western Burbs. What's up, Sam?
Hey, Sam.
Hey, gentlemen. How's it going? Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, question for you. Kind of off topic, but first off, screw NCAA tournament. Let's bring on Masters Week because, in my opinion, that's the way it's going to go. But all good fun with the Masters coming up in the start of the season. My question for you guys is, leading into the future for myself, but maybe other callers as well. What are your thoughts on, you know, like a practice bay inside your house, wherever it is? What are your thoughts on, you know, the price maybe from 5 to 10 to 15 to 20 and so on to setting up a decent bay, just getting your swings in for the most part? Well, maybe a simulator, maybe not a simulator. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know that you need an actual simulator. I think what you need is a launch monitor. And they make some now much more inexpensive ones out there that are much more affordable. Now, if you can go to the whole nine yards, and I've got some friends that have some beautiful simulators in their living room of their home. I mean,
I'm sure their wives are thrilled.
The reading room moved upstairs in this one particular household. They are still married, but hanging on for dear life. But if you can put in a simulator, I'm envious. Because if you can do that, that is so awesome. But my dad's got a friend, Cliff, who's got a place out in Villa Park, Elmhurst area. And it's his business. And he uses a simple net, a sheet, and a launch monitor. And it's rudimentary, but he invested where he needed to on the monitor and on the mat. And
the mat's the biggest thing, I think.
Yes.
Like, I mean, reality of it, like, because you just bang up your wrists and
that's
whatnot.
Right.
But you have to invest in the mat and not short yourself on that, where I know a lot of places do.
Exactly. And if you can put it in your garage or have it in an area where you can be flexible and peel the net back and the whatnot, but if you can have a fixed location for it and be able to have that all the time, I'm personally very envious and jealous and would love to know where you're at so I can come over and play.
Well, that's the goal for this coming winter. You know, I shouldn't say this coming winter, but that's the goal financial-wise for us. So I've been looking into it, and, there's just so many options out there, and it's like you just don't want to, like, invest all this money, you know, and kind of sell yourself short where it's going to be outdated in, you know, 2 years or 3 years.
I would go out and get a good launch monitor, and also when you have the projection screen, get a stronger light bulb, because then the vividness of your image on that sheet that's behind the net will be more realistic. And that's also what I learned from my dad's friend Cliff, who built his. So it's again, launch monitor, mat, and a net. That's basically what you need. Now, you can take this thing out to $50,000 plus if you wish.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't think that that's necessary.
Yeah, and money doesn't grow on trees, unfortunately.
Not in my house.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Sam. Appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, and by the way, guys, we all want to see the greatest comeback in sports history, so Tiger's going to win the Masters.
There you go. I believe 75-1 is the number I saw. Hey, you put a little money down on Tiger, 75-1. You can spend 50 grand on your setup there.
100%. It'll be going in, trust me, because I still want to see it.
Yep. All right, Sam. Appreciate the phone call there. That's Sam in the Western Burbs. You want to join us, 312-332-3776. Real quick before we hit the break, can you kind of explain what the launch monitor is for people who maybe aren't aware?
Okay, so a launch monitor is this device that at a very high speed, it takes a series of photos, and what it's doing is it's picking up, through the use of algorithms, the spin rates of the ball, the side spin rate, the backspin, the ball speed coming off of your club. Now, some launch monitors will even pick up how fast the club was going through, so you get a reading on your club swing speed, but then you're also getting the equivalence of then what is that speed of the ball coming off the face of the club. And then it will also measure how much curve you put on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have then the monitor that will actually show the picture, it will show the exact arcing and where it would go, and it calculates how far it flew and how far it would have rolled out given normal conditions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it is uncannily good how it picks it up in that quick. So really you just got to make sure you got some decent lighting for the launch monitor to pick up the shot. Now, your guys that, you know, those world long drive leaders that have ball speeds that are 220 miles an hour plus, launch monitors like this don't work for them because it goes off so fast the camera can't even pick it up. It really does. But for us laymen, it's the best thing we could ever do. So you could literally, and I got a lot of friends that have done it, they've got them in their garage. And then what they do is they throw the net up into the rafters and they can park their car and pull the car back out and away they go. It's crazy how inexpensive you can now do this. Yeah.
312-332-3776. If you want to join us here, when we come back, we'll take a little spin through what's going on at the Valspar. This segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club. The CDGA Golf Show will be right back.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
The segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Coming up in about 5 minutes from now, we'll talk to James Standhart, the director of instruction over at Golf Tech. But first, let's take a quick spin around the Valspar Championship taking place down in Florida. And really not a whole lot of intrigue unless you are a fan of golfers named Kevin. This one, there are seven Kevins that are in this event, and I think the PGA Tour even tweeted out that that is the record for most number of Kevins in an event.
In the past 40 years, it ties the record of seven. There was a Kevin Streelman, a Kevin Kisner, a Kevin Tway, a Kevin Yu, a Kevin Doherty, a Kevin Alwyn, and a Kevin Roy. So funny though, three of them missed the cut, but four of them are all amongst the top 20 or 30.
Including Kevin Streelman, who you mentioned. He's in a tie for first right now at 6-under alongside Brendan Todd, Mackenzie Hughes, Chandler Phillips, and Stuart Sink. A couple of the other notables on this leaderboard, Justin Thomas is tied for 6th right now. Cam Young tied for 14th. Really not a lot of big swingers in this event. Adam Hadwin tied for 20th right here.
Kevin Mitchell's tied at 6th, and Kevin Roy's tied at 14th with those two individuals you just read.
There's some Kevins for you right there.
Yep.
So the Kevins everywhere down at the Valspar. But yeah, I think we'll start to see a little bit more pickup as we get closer and closer to the Masters. Usually you want to probably get in maybe like one or two tournaments between now and the Masters.
Yeah, you want to keep your game sharp. Mm-hmm.
Obviously the player's a big one.
Oh,
big part of that.
Obviously, yeah. And for some, they start to take this time off and start to come back. Others are working some things out, a la Justin Thomas and a few of the others. But notably, who missed the cut was Keegan Bradley, Zach Johnson, Gary Woodland, Luke Donald, Nick Hardy, Tony Finau. Mm-hmm. So, and Jordan Spieth is
Sam Burns
on
too.
The bubble too. Yeah. And so they were finishing up the second round today. But it's good to see an old timer like Stuart Sink
up
at the top. And, you know, funny, you think about, we were just chatting about the Masters. He's the last guy to have made a hole in one at the Masters in 2022. Mm-hmm. So,
I do want to give a quick shout out to one of the local guys as well, Doug Gim. He made the cut. He's made a couple cuts now.
He really has.
He's starting to round his game into form. He's looked pretty good so far.
I'd like to see him do well down in Augusta. I think it would just be so great to see a local guy walk in, in the final group or two.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find his stats for this season, how many cuts he's made, because I feel like every week when we're doing a little look around what's happening in the latest tournaments, I feel like I've brought his name up a lot lately.
You have.
He's made 5 cuts this year already. Mm-hmm. 5 cuts in 7 events, and also has a top 10, and has 5 top 25 finishes as well.
That will earn you some dollars.
Currently sitting 47th on the FedEx Cup playoff rankings, and as you mentioned, earning some dollars, he's already made north of $1 million this year. So good to be Doug Gim these days.
Yes, it certainly is.
All right, when we come back, we will talk with James Standhart from over at Golf Tech. By the way, this segment all brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Back in 2 minutes.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.